Hey guys, this is Joe. Today I want to introduce you to our partner Vanta. Achieving ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliance can unlock major growth for your company and build customer trust, but the process can be time intense and costly. Vanta automates compliance, getting you audit ready quickly and saving up to 85% of associated costs. And Vanta scales with your business, helping you enter new markets. Join 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora that trust Vanta. Claim 20% off Vanta at vanta.com/startupradio. That's vanta.com, spelled vanta.com/startupradio.
When you're an entrepreneur with a great idea, it can be daunting to find funding. Startup Raven takes the process out of your hands by helping entrepreneurs connect and learn about potential investors all in one place, without any long-filled forms or 1,000 questions. Sign up for early access at startupraven.com.
Welcome to startuprad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRate.io, your startup podcast from Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. Today, I do have Peter here with me. Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. We may add that you have been a guest in my podcast before. We link, so you run multiple companies. We link down here in the show notes our interview with Pythia, the AI startup, as well when you, as the interview of starting why you have been talking about how to run multiple companies at the same time. But today we are here for something else, because you guys are running a buy and build strategy. Now, let us talk first a little bit about who you are and how you actually started this idea, because you don't wake up one morning from a corporate job and say, hey, let's do a buy and build strategy.
All right. So, Joe, thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure. And happy Father's Day, by the way.
Yes, exactly. We are publishing this on the 18th of May, which is a public holiday in Germany and many states, as well as Father's Day. So happy Father's Day to everybody.
Happy Father's Day, Joe. So, right. To go back to your question. I went into aerospatial engineering and economy when I was studying. So I thought I'm gonna go the corporate ladder. Did some internships in some major companies, but always had the thing that I was too young. So everybody told me, you're too young for that job. So all the jobs I wanted were basically age restricted, at least in those corporations. I think it's a very widely common phenomenon. So I was like, so how old do I have to be? I was 22 at the time. They said like, yeah, you have to be at least 30 to run this department. Like, you know, unrelated to whether, you know, skill or whatever, you just have to pass that barrier. So I thought, I can do this. Like, I can just wait, no matter how good I become, just wait. So I decided to quit it. I mean, I think most people who want to found something need a little push. At some point, I definitely needed it because it's a scary and highly unknown field to go into when you really, also my family I had no background from home of entrepreneurs or something like that. This was like really something totally off, but that was a good push. So I decided I could try some things and then worst case come back at 27 or 29 or whatever and still cross the 30 barrier and then, you know, do the career thing. But well, that's I think a little over 10 years ago. So here we are. I'm really happy to do the job I do. So I guess all in all, it was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, first thing was Dr. Severin, a beauty company, e-commerce, heavily e-commerce based, heavily Amazon based. And from there, after going through the German Shark Tank and everything, more brands, we created more brands on the same construct and concept. Did some socks brands and they all live still today in our portfolio. But as you mentioned, lately we started also adding external companies to our portfolio since pretty much 1 year now. We've done 3 transactions due to the current pricing. The current pricing is very low on e-commerce startups. Right.
Can you tell us a little bit how this actually gets in the whole strategy? So basically, you do have an AI company that helps you forecast the next trends in consumer business. You do already run a few consumer-facing, consumer-focused brands on this basis, and you use some of the cash flow to actually buy more companies. Is that approximately how it works?
That's a really good summary.
Yes.
So, right. Our AI company basically consults consumer companies. And since we are running consumer companies, we're also using our own tool a lot, which fuels basically what it does is predicting trends through evaluating data, big amounts of data. And then out of that, you can build like products and services, and you can calculate better, like whether the amount of people who need this are growing or are declining. And so we use that. Yes. And to your question, when we buy something, we integrate it into our processes, which are very standardized for all of like all the base processes like logistics and supply chain and website maintenance and all these things. And we integrated them into our base processes. And then we would have a brand manager taking care of the brand or a CEO we put in place if they don't come with the brands we buy.
What first came to mind is something that is more or less similar to the people who are buying up Amazon shops. Is something along this line, like a buy and build strategy?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So this has been a trend for a while now. I think for us, it's not really the same case because we are we're just adding to our portfolio. It was like, it's just currently for us, it's cheaper to buy than to build ourselves. Click prices are very high, like starting something up right now. And it's just the common question, make or buy. And for us over the past 12 months, it was definitely buy because click prices, online marketing prices are high, but company prices are low. So you buy a structure that already has customers, that already has a certain SEO status, all these things that are quite expensive to replicate right now, you get. Before that, it wasn't the case. Before, like, especially maybe 2020, 2021, prices for e-commerce companies were really high. Like, the multiples were through the roof. So, same question, making was a better way for us. Now, for the past 12 months, prices have been dropping extremely. So this makes more sense for us now.
Uh-huh.
But this is not like our forever strategy, right? We're adding to our portfolio. We're making ourselves bigger. but as a opposed to the companies that you were specifically founded to do that, it's a slight difference. Also, we don't want to have too much Amazon exposure. Mm-hmm. We definitely prefer having the customer on our side. So we're doing the Shopify way, basically. Mm-hmm. Everything we buy is we're looking at Shopify-based stores. And in very rare cases, we're then moving them to, like, our first transaction was non-Shopify, so we're looking at moving it over time, to Shopify.
What first came to mind was, do you have any idea what the forces are behind this, meaning the marketing prices go up and the company prices go down? Is this kind of a global shift in the value generation? Are the marketing entities, what comes to mind are Google, Facebook, and so on and so forth, do they become more powerful in terms of pricing than the e-commerce companies?
So, well, there's definitely a lot of centralized power when it comes to online marketing, like Meta, the Facebook company, Facebook Instagram company, and Google have a huge share of all the clicks delivered. And there is definitely also, even though it's not openly communicated, but there's been some leaks about pricing power abuse, where the bidding system, for example, is rigged on Google's side. But without me being an expert in that, it's just that's definitely a fact. Also, since Corona, I think a lot more players entered the online marketing space because there was no way to advertise otherwise or to sell otherwise for a while. So, but prices have been rising since my career started by maybe times 20 or times 30. Like 2013, the same click we would buy back then for a few cents, maybe 2-3 cents, now cost us up to 150 or more. So prices have been rising. It's not as cheap as it once was, but on the other hand, conversion techniques have gone better. Mm-hmm. And to close up on your question, I think there's a huge pressure right now on companies from many sides. Like, customers are a bit more shy than they were over the past years. General economy is, there's a lot of question marks. Financing has become tighter. So refinancing, especially business models that were built or are running on external capital flow, that's definitely has been tightening a lot. I mean, interest rates have been rising. So that's gotten more expensive and tighter. So there's like a three dimensional Bermuda triangle going on for I think a lot of companies, which is financing, like I mentioned, becoming harder and tighter, the inflation making like production prices higher, and can you translate those prices to your customer, ? You need more working capital actually to produce right now if you have physical products. Mm-hmm. And number three, obviously consumers being a bit more restrictive with their money because heating has become more expensive, all kind of things where you look at the average consumer and you say, okay, this person has maybe $300 to spend a month extra after all costs and everything, and has $300 just to go shopping a month. For a lot of people, living costs have increased by more than $300 a month. So all these people, for example, who had $300 a month to spend, now maybe have $100 or zero. Mm-hmm. Or minus $200. So you might, obviously, it's harder. So for example, just to pick Germany, I think heating prices and electricity prices per household have increased by, I think, on average, over 200 euros per household per month. So that's definitely, inflation wise, food and everything has become much more expensive. So you have a, depending on the living standard and the habits, you have a much higher base cost. So that's a number three, which is really tough for I think for companies, also for e-commerce. And I think on the other hand, buying has frozen up completely in many cases. We're the only ones bidding on a company. So this didn't used to be like this. It's a real buyer's market right now. Because I think, the number of transactions, has lowered. I think the appetite, also of our, of the companies that have been specifically founded for this case, that have also been struggling lately. I think this is what causes this immense delta between what your original question was, between the click prices, online marketing prices, and the company valuations right now.
Mm-hmm. On the macro picture, the mood, the available capital for the consumer is not as free as it used to be, as much a free cash flow, free spending money as they used to have due to inflation plus additional worries. And on the other hand, the investors that would compete with you in bidding up the prices are currently not bidding, basically. Right. So as you said, this is a buyer's market. I would be interested, what terms of pricing are we talking about here for e-commerce company? I assume right now only in Germany.
Right. But it is quite a global trend. So we're also looking at a lot of targets overseas. We haven't bought anything that's not in Germany, but we're keeping an eye on it already. So we used to have like 8x EBIT. Mm-hmm. 8x EBITDA, but like 8x earnings before taxes. So let's just say seven times profit, six seven times profit used to be. Mm-hmm. 2021 used to be a solid benchmark. There are definitely tons of cases that were outside of this, but for a proper business, if it's not big enough for it to gain, like for example, Just Spices got sold, I think, at 30x sales or something, or 20x sales, 15, something between 15 and 30x sales. So that's a different story. But basically this was the more or less the benchmark in let's say in e-commerce brands that are between 1 million and 5 million revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So quite small. So now it's about 2x. So mm-hmm. the price has declined by 75%. Or to put it the other way around, the multiples have dropped from 8, let's say 8 to 2. And what I think is it definitely needed some adjusting to the current market, the market circumstances, but I think you could have halved the valuation, would have been fair to my mind, but it has been halved basically 2x from 8 to 2. And I think that's why, and that's basically the reason for us buying, because obviously you buy when you think the value is higher than what you pay for.
Mm-hmm. You already made three transactions, we've heard.
Yes.
What are you looking at in terms of company, in terms of profitability, cash flow, and revenue size?
Right. So we're looking at profitability first and foremost. That's our thing, because that's our strategy to, especially maybe considering that there might be some windy and stormy times ahead. We just want to make sure we have the profitability we need to also survive potential crises. As a non-externally funded startup, you always obviously have an eye for cash flow and free cash, especially free cash and solid earnings. So that's what we look at mostly. Having a solid business with that has also a solid earnings. Has solid earnings. So, but what we mostly look at is like what we call basically adjusted earnings. So a lot of the things we look at most of the things have some major issues or major, let's say, management mistakes. Mm-hmm. And repairing those usually leads to a much higher adjusted earnings. Like makes the adjusted earnings look way different than the real earnings. On the other hand, if you have a founder or a founding team that is working their asses off, then you have to adjust your EBIT the other way around, because if you have like two or three founders who pull like, you know, 100-hour work weeks or useful but pay themselves like maybe, I don't know, 50K a year each, then you definitely, the EBIT you're looking at is not the real one. So for companies in these sizes, like the adjusted earnings are very much more important than the earnings on the paper, because you don't run through compliance. It's everything is a bit more unprofessional than if you look at, I don't know, like a big corporate company.
I see. Are you guys really turning into PE investor here?
I don't know. We might build a fund soon, right? But it's just speculation right now. First, we want to consolidate and prove our point of what we're doing. So our plan is, if the market environment stays this way and prices remain more or less the way they are now, to continue buying up until late 2027. Mm-hmm. So basically another rough 4 years from now, and to reach with our buy and build portfolio to reach somewhere around 80 million in revenue and 20 million profit. So at that time, we would be much rather a fund than now.
You think you can do this better than a private equity investor?
Not better than all private equity investors. I know a few and have big respect for them. And there are some really, really good things going on there. But what we have is basically the structure for that. So we don't need to look for an external CEO, whatever. We have all the processes in our house. We have built them all from scratch, like from zero revenue. We have a high expertise in the company, and we have our processes have been basically market tested in a way that I think is hard to replicate. So this is also one of the reasons why we can offer for the people who are selling their businesses, we can offer them to mic drop. This is something, and if people really want out of their company and are like, I can't stand being in this place for another day, this is where we can come in, because we have it's always the same base processes. Like I said, all these things, website maintenance, supply chain, advertisement, obviously adapt to the product, but mostly many, many processes are the same. And I think this is our advantage that we're playing. This is the hand we're playing right now.
So basically you're currently looking, you only bought in Germany, but we already talked to you. You looked at overseas, European Union. You're also open to something like America, Asia?
Yes. So we're monitoring prices right now. Have been doing this for a while. Obviously it's easier for us right now to buy in Germany because this like our home market. Mm-hmm. But for expansion, maybe we'll look, depending on the prices, obviously, always. Mm-hmm. So for now, our pipeline of targets is filled very, very well. Too well, in a way. It's hard to keep up the flow because once you start buying, all the M&A brokers and everyone who's looking for the buyer, which is hard right now, are sending you decks mm-hmm. without end. Right. So,
how many pitch decks do you get like in an average month right now?
In an average month, I would say about 30 to 40 without requesting any. Mm-hmm. If we, like, for example, we just bought a company like 4 weeks ago. So right now we're not actively asking for new decks because mm-hmm. we were looking at buying like 4 targets a year max. Actually, our benchmark for our plan is 3 per year. So 4 is like just if there's a special occasion to be able to integrate. I think we're able to learn a lot from the buy and build companies that have appeared over the last few years. Those Amazon mm-hmm. buyers and everything. We talked to a lot of them, and so we were able to identify some major mistakes that they have had to run through. And we don't run through that. That one of them is like buying too fast, not being able to integrate, not being able to consolidate properly. So that's one of the major takeaways. And the things that I mentioned earlier, is the entrepreneur really the company, or is the company working without the entrepreneur? Mm-hmm. So this is why speed and I think diligence are key to making this right, even though prices are low.
Mm-hmm. What you describe, basically, I would see like there's one acquisition company and there's a marketing team, there's a SEO team, there's a distribution team, there's a logistics team, yada, yada, yada. Basically, you plug in the new company. So you have one legal entity with which you're buying. Which one is that?
No, actually, we're buying the companies as a whole. So they remain for mm-hmm. now. They have their own entity.
Mm-hmm. But basically, the structure is the same, and you use one holding
company, mm-hmm. and then there is all the entities below it.
Mm-hmm. So what's the name of the holding company?
TIPQ.
TIPQ. Okay. Are you open to talk to other investors who like your approach? Because you just said, "Oh, well, one day down the road, we may raise a fund."
Sure. Sure. So, our current plan to reach our goals at the end of 2027 of 20 million in earnings and 80 million in revenue, that is in need of an additional 8 million of an investment over the years. So mm-hmm. I think from our plan perspective, if we want to go this far, otherwise we just buy from our own cash flow. So far, we just bought everything from our own cash flow and haven't leveraged anything, but it would take some leveraging or investment over the years to keep up. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, sure. To your question, sure. We're talking to you already. Yes.
My next question would have been, how are you funding your business? But right now we're still at operative cash flow from the other right. consumer brands. Mm-hmm. What is like the long-term goal? We already know, like in terms of value, 80 million annual revenue in euros, 20 million in profits. But what is like the strategic long-term goal? You want to IPO the entity at one point?
Yes. This is going to be the most, or selling to a big corporate who is looking for something of a strategic entity. But mm-hmm. I think the most probable way will be an IPO.
Mm-hmm. I see. So that should be a few years down the road?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So definitely after 27.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
After 27, I see. You're talking about basically how I would describe it. You buy the e-commerce dip right now.
Mm-hmm.
I would be interested, what's your outlook for the German and European economy since you have the goal 2027? Do you see it only the economy, the e-commerce, the purchasing behavior going back to pre-corona levels in 2027?
So that's a really, I think people smarter than me need to answer this question. That's a really, really hard question. It's really hard to predict macro, I think. But definitely from what's possible to see right now is that households have more costs than they had before. And basically earning hasn't adapted to this, like salaries and all these things. So I think for now, a little bit of a tightening in consumer spending is very likely to continue. I mean, the government is trying to make packages. You've seen it yourself. They're very small and they're basically a drop on a hot stone. So I think this is going to take a while. And also what is visible right now is that interest rates have hiked a lot. And people have bought houses at high prices over the past few years. So that's also another stress factor on consumers and on the markets. So especially if you have adjustable rates, that's going to be a really tough time, I think. So we are basically preparing for the worst. That's how we are running our businesses and hoping for the best, of course. But it's hard to tell. I cannot make a good prediction on this. But there are some factors that are definitely rough. On the other hand, there's a lot of things that are going good. Efficiency should be rising a lot. New tools are coming out. Are we able to cover this whole thing? Cover the bigger slides with efficiency. Like are we able to keep a certain growth, certain healthy growth through efficiency? Maybe efficiency options are definitely rising over the past few months. You definitely have heard and talked about it. ChatGPT, Midjourney, all these mm-hmm. tools, insane efficiency increases. We see it in our company. More and more processes are being taken over by AI in our company. I basically always have two tabs open, one for Midjourney and one for ChatGPT, and do most of my work and try also it's basically a mandatory thing in our company to try to do as many tasks as possible. At least 50% is the current benchmark of your processes with these tools. You can write your email with it. You can write your product description with it. You can write your text, your presentation, your whatever not. You can make design concepts all day long. You can do 50 design concepts in a day easily. It's insane. It's something that I, as an entrepreneur, have obviously always wished for. It's like having a magic wand in some way, like having a Harry Potter magic wand in your hand and being able to immediately produce what's on your mind. I mean, at least go a much bigger distance from your mind to put it on the road. So that's pretty great time. So maybe that will cover some of the holds. We'll see about it.
Our interview today is sponsored by the European Enterprise Network. They're based here in Frankfurt, Rhein-Main, in Hessen. Did it help you in any way to be based here? What do you think and like about the local business environment?
Right. So especially the institution you just mentioned is definitely one of the really good things here. There's community. It's growing also. There's hubs and everything. So I think the local governments and banks have also made big efforts to push this forward, to push the region forward. So I'm quite happy with being here. Otherwise, we would have moved already. So it's a good region to be in. It's a lot of access to a lot of things, and Berlin is not far for anything more special. So we're good. We're also like very central between Munich and Berlin and Düsseldorf and Köln. So it's a really good place to be, I think.
Also enough talent for what you're looking for?
Now, talent could definitely be, there's a lot of competition here. There's a lot of good companies in the region, and there's a lot of competition for talent. So we have a lot of people who work from other places, but hiring here is actually somewhat tough. Yeah.
If you would have something like a wish in terms of addressing the decision makers here in the state, what would be your like number one priority for this?
Probably building more accelerators and incubators. Yeah, I think that helps a lot for a region as a whole. I think this grassrooting is really something. We also started in one, and a lot of the companies that were founded there in our time are still around, and I built my professional network together with these other people who were there, so we still have a really strong bond because we started off like we're so small and young and you know, we talked so much late into the night. We're sitting there, and you know, even though it was really different businesses everybody was founding, there was so much in common. Obviously, how do you hire? All these questions. Which bank do you take? Which what? Where do you find investors? I mean, all these questions are common. You have in common, even though the business might be different. So this was really helped me, like understanding what is an entrepreneurship, what is this, what is that. It was the first time somebody said, "Hey guys, you're a startup." I was like, "What? Are we a startup? We're a beauty company. I don't know. Is this a startup? Yeah, because you were selling online. Oh well, okay. So then I guess we're a startup. That's cool." So a lot of like, you break the first ground. I think it's really important, right?
I see. I would have a lot more questions to actually bother you with, but don't worry, we'll do it in another interview. I kind of have the feeling that we'll have one in the future again.
Right.
Everybody would like to reach out to you. They can go down here in the show notes and directly reach you via your LinkedIn profile. Are you guys currently hiring for any of your companies? Could you share a careers website link with me?
Right. Well, we are hiring. Especially what we're looking for is new partners to come around or along. Since we're growing so fast, we're handling this a little bit like a law firm or something like that, like with a partner structure. Mm-hmm. And we're looking for partners who are from the analytical space, but also are able to do hands-on things like COO roles and stuff like that, who really like this management part and stuff like that to deploy things. This is what we're really looking for.
Mm-hmm. I see. So thank you very much for your time. Everybody who'd like to learn more, go down here in the show notes, wherever you're listening to this, wherever you're watching this, or go to our Medium blog, medium.com/startuprate-io, and there you can learn more. Peter, it was a pleasure to have you again as guest, and hopefully see you soon again.
Yeah, one more sentence to the last point. We're also accepting open, just open, open letters, in sense of just send us who you are and what you're doing, and we'll figure out a role, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Sounds pretty good.
Right. Okay.
So,
well, Joe, thank you very much as well, and have a very good week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, and thanks everyone for listening. Bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.